This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Why nobody has sued Arnie Duncan, I do not understand. But I would like to encourage them to do so. Sue, baby, sue.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the RG3 of Education Policy, Michael Brickman.
Wow, that's quite a compliment, especially, I hope I'm the second half RG3.
I was going to say, did you watch the game? What kind of compliment is that? Are you kidding me? That's not supposed to be a compliment. No, you're kind of still new. We're you know, protecting you because we don't, you know, we want to baby you a little bit. But those days are over, Brickman. Those days are over. Today, we're going to bring it. We're going to bring it, and we're going to have real debates, and I'm not going to baby you anymore, just like RG3's knee. That's the analogy I'm making.
Coming for the knees.
Going for the knees. Exactly. All right. Well, anyway, I think we have used the RG3 before, maybe with Rick or with other people in the past. That was back last year when he was playing great. Maybe he'll play great again this year. Hey, how'd your Green Bay Packers do?
Not so good. There's a lot to like. They got to work in the secondary, but they're getting their losing out of the way at the beginning of the season so they can continue on later on. But they play RG3 and the Redskins next week, so we'll see.
Good. I'm just excited that I know a few things about sports I can talk about, including that my Michigan Wolverines beat Notre Dame. Boom. Boom.
Did you catch Eminem up at the booth?
I did not. Was he in the booth? Oh, cool. And I do take that as a good sign, by the way. There was a big anti-Common Core event in South Bend the other day. But I don't know. I somehow think the fact that Michigan beat Notre Dame just before that happened, it's all good. It just is a good sign of things to come for the Common Core.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's get started. Lots to cover today. It is back to school full force. I was at back to school week this week for my son's kindergarten class. So it must be real. Things are really happening out there in education land. Pamela, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
As of this podcast recording time, it looks like Bill de Blasio might have eked out enough votes to avoid a runoff and has claimed the Democratic nomination for New York mayor. Some are claiming this is a repudiation of Bloomberg's education reforms. True?
So Michael, Diane Ravitch, among others, are saying this, and there were exit polls that showed that education was one of the top issues in the race, and certainly de Blasio said some very strident things about turning his back on the Bloomberg education legacy. Still, personally, I'm looking at this and saying, look, this is a small part of the Democratic base doesn't like education reform. What's news about that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, first of all, that might be true that voters going to the polls care about education, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're voting for one candidate or another in the primary for that reason. If you look at their platforms, there wasn't a lot of, I think, daylight between a lot of the top candidates. And so that's part of the issue. And I think it'll be a lot more clear as we get into the general election as to how much people really do care about the issue.
Yeah. So if de Blasio does get a clean win here and then we go into the general, it's de Blasio against Joe Lota, who is going to claim the Bloomberg legacy on education and other issues. And we'll have a clear contrast to see for the city of New York, who has not voted for a Democratic candidate since David Dinkins back in 1992. So this is going to be kind of interesting to watch. But, you know, people like to ask, what are the implications for the nation? I mean, how much can we learn from what's happening in New York City? And what do you think? I mean, New York's not exactly representative of the United States, but Bloomberg's been an important leader on education reform.
Well, you want your biggest city to be a leader. You want there to be actual proof that urban education reform can work. And I think there's definitely some positive signs coming out of New York. If you look, unfortunately, I think at de Blasio's education platform, and you have to say he's the odds on favor right now in the general election, assuming he gets there, it's, I think, left of left. And it's everything from, I think he said one of his first priorities is going to be ditching A through F grades for the schools. And if you go through his platform, it's every possible constituency on education. And it's more money, more programs,
less
more money, more programs, less accountability.
Less charter schools. Yet he did not get the union endorsement. So this is interesting. I mean, to me, this is... Now maybe it is going to be that he's so far left that he's not going to, he's not going to end up promoting anything that the unions would disagree with anyway. I do think about how the unions continue. They haven't been very good at picking winners lately. I mean, right? They picked Hillary, and instead it was Barack Obama. You've got the mayor in Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, who owes them nothing. I mean, you keep seeing that there are these politicians getting elected without their support, which is an interesting dynamic. Okay, topic number two, Pamela.
Jay Green argued this week that the best way to reform the schools is not to reform them. In other words, focus on creating alternatives to public schools via school choice, but don't try to reform the public schools themselves. Is he right?
What do you think, Brickman?
Yeah, I think he's got a point. I think that if you look at established institutions, there's a lot of talk about that in education reform circles. It's tougher to fix the institutions that are already there. I think there needs to be a distinction, though, between actually ensuring there's systematic reforms, which can make a difference, and ensuring that what's going on the ground is being improved. And we as education reformers, I think he's right, do sometimes take kind of a top-down approach. And that's unfortunate because those aren't always the things that are going to make a difference. But
all right, hold on, Brickman. All right, this is where I'm going to really shake it up here. I feel like you're waffling on this one, okay? Look, Jay Green's saying, let's do school choice alone, right? Forget standards-based reform, forget teacher evaluations, any other teacher quality reforms, preschool funding, any of those kind, anything, just, you know, increase options for parents, work at providing, you know, more alternatives to the traditional public schools. That alone is all we can do to try to put pressure on the schools to improve. And because what he says is basically, look, public schools don't want to change, right? You try to layer on top of these new standards or tests or teacher evaluations, they don't want it. And so they will go through the motions with it. Now, my view is, look, yes, I'm a huge fan of school choice. And I think that the biggest breakthrough opportunities are in new schools, like new charter schools, right? At the same time, there's, for the foreseeable future, and I don't mean like the next 5 years, I mean the next 50 years, there's going to be a huge number of American kids going to traditional public schools and school districts run by school boards, et cetera, et cetera. And I just don't buy it that we can't improve those things at all. And you look at a state like Massachusetts or like Florida, something happened to allow those states to make dramatic gains on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. Now, we can't prove that it was standards-based reform. It could have been demographic changes, maybe, could have been something else. But and when I look at all the likely contenders, standards-based reform is the likeliest one there that I see. That, you know, they put in strong standards, they held schools accountable, they held kids accountable, you saw gains. So for Jay to say, let's not do that, I think is to ignore the evidence that it can make a huge amount of difference and life-changing differences for kids who, you know, otherwise would not have been ready to, say, go to college and succeed there, who now are able to do that. So I say to Jay, come on, don't be so, have so little confidence that we can make some difference in the traditional public schools. So what side of this are you on, Brickman?
I'm going to keep straddling the fence on this one. I think he's right in areas where there is choice. I think that's where the focus should be, but that's living in an ideal world, and unfortunately, that's not the real world. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to continue to push for more options, but and where that succeeds, that should be the focus, is choice and competition. But unfortunately, the vast majority of students and parents don't have choice and are choosing a traditional public option. And we still have an obligation to make sure that those traditional schools are successful.
Yeah, you know, you're from Wisconsin, Brickman. I mean, here, you know, it's school choice mecca in Milwaukee, right? And yet I think we would all say that if Wisconsin had pursued the kinds of reforms Massachusetts had on top of school choice, it would be in a much better place today. Instead, it was the laughingstock of the standards-based reform movement with, you know, terrible standards and laughable tests and crazy easy cut scores and all the rest. And guess what? They haven't made any gains on NAEP. Shame on Wisconsin.
Really going for the knees, just like you said.
Come on. And you don't even have a good football team anymore. Come on. What's up with that?
That's over the line.
All right. Sorry.
Yeah, fight back.
Right. Okay. Topic number three.
Arne Duncan has nixed California's proposal to junk most of its state testing program as it transitions to the Common Core standards, saying that he cannot approve the program, quote, in good conscience. California never received a large Race to the Top grant, and it was never issued an NCLB waiver. Is Arne upholding reform principles, or is he acting like a bully?
Bully. What about you, Brickman?
See, unlike you, Mike, I'm not too much into the name calling, but yeah, bully.
All right, finally, come on. What are you, Mr. Nuance over here? Shades of gray? What is this? The 2008 presidential campaign all over again? Look, What I'm saying here, don't you remember there was all that talk about nuance, shades of gray versus, you know, that's supposed to, anyways.
Well, one of us was on a radio show with the secretary, and I didn't hear the word bully thrown out there.
Okay.
I don't know. It's easy
right
here on the podcast.
Okay. Ooh, ouch. Oh, he's right. Zing. Brickman's right. Zing. I was on the Diane Rehm show last week, and Arnie Duncan, yes, he said nice things about me, but I did still get in a few good punches about his policy on vouchers.
You were tweeting at the same time, as I recall.
I did.
So,
yes.
Good for you, multitasking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. Right now, I'm actually swimming as we do this podcast. It's amazing. Okay. Back to the question, California. Look, on issue after issue, the Department of Education has been in micromanagement mode, right? Here's California. They're saying, look, we have this dilemma. We have to field test the Smarter Balance test in the spring in order to get ready for the next year. A lot of kids are going to have to take these tests. So what we'd like to do is have these kids not take the other California test so that we're not double testing them, right? Now, look, you can see arguments on either side of this that maybe that's, you know, look, it would be good to have data on all kids, but you could also see the over-testing thing. You know, when there's an issue like this where you can see all sides, guess what? Let the people closest to the issue decide. I think California was making a decent decision here. Arnie Duncan's saying, no, 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 can't do that. Same time, he's telling Arizona they're going to be on a high-risk status because for their waiver because they want, in high schools, the graduation rate to count for 15% instead of 20%. And Arnie would like it to be 20%. So I have a word for Secretary Duncan. Hey, you want to make these decisions? Go back to Chicago. Sorry, I'm just all fired up about this. Go back to Chicago and run a school system, but stop trying to micromanage things from Washington.
Yeah, who would have thought that all these regulations and all this micromanaging in Washington would result in even more micromanaging? Because when you're coming from D.C. and you're trying to, and this gets into what we were talking about before with, you know, the state and the local versus the federal.
Yeah.
You try and micromanage from D.C., you only end up micromanaging more and more and more because it doesn't exactly turn out the way you thought it was going to. Yeah. And yep. It's yep. What happens when you get involved in this in the first place, I think.
Look, you know, Arnie Duncan saw what this was like when he ran Chicago Public Schools. And I remember I was in the Department of Education on the other side of this issue from him on some things like around public school choice and supplemental services. But look, he was probably right at the time that, you know, in Chicago, for example, they were trying to run a good school system. They were trying to make decisions that were good for kids. We should have given them more of the benefit of the doubt. And likewise here, when he looks out at these states, he's got to decide, do you see actors who are generally trying to look the other way and are racist or classist or don't care about poor kids? You know what? There might be some of that out there. And every once in a while, you got to say no to a state or a school district that wants to do something that's beyond the pale. But by and large, we now have people out there who I think are trying to make decent decisions. There's also all kinds of good advocacy groups at the state and local level. Arnie Duncan needs to ease up on the reins here, all right? And you can understand why Republicans are so angry about all of this stuff, including Common Core, that feels like you've got the federal government now in the driver's seat. And Arnie Duncan, day after day, just keeps feeding that line with his actions.
Well, not to mention the fact that in California, they have local waivers for some districts. And so they're totally telling the state government that should be managing education in that state that they don't have a role to some extent. And that's really going to fire some people up, I think, especially as those reforms go forward.
Why nobody has sued Arnie Duncan, I do not understand. But I would like to encourage them to do so. Sue, baby, sue. All right. That is all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. I'm a little hot under the collar today.
Fired up.
And it's partly the weather in D.C., but that's not it. Okay. Now it's time for everyone's favorite Amber's Research Minute. Joining us for the second week in a row in this coveted spot, it's Dara Z. Handler.
Hi. I usually get more of an intro than that. That sounded so anticlimactic.
What are you talking about? That was a big. I said your name in a very dramatic way.
For Amber's Research Minute?
Amber's Research Minute. That's right. They already heard me say that part. Yes. So what do we know about Amber? Is she duly married at this point?
She is officially married and now hasn't changed her name on her email yet. But she sent me an email yesterday and I told her to leave me alone.
I know. While she's on her honeymoon in Jamaica. Come on, Amber. She's now Amber Northern. Very exciting. But I'm glad that she's married. There was no runaway bride kind of situation or anything else as far as...
Were you anticipating something
No.
It's Amber.
But you discover
she likes to plan. She's not going to plan
that's
and
true.
Then not be there.
No. I, That is true. That is absolutely true. All right. Well, good. That's very exciting. I guess she'll be back on the show. So you get one more shot. This is your big shot here.
Like, I'll try not to squander it.
Don't squander it. Yep. And what you got for us this week?
Today we've got a study called The Effectiveness of Secondary Math Teachers from Teach for America and the Teaching Fellows Program, out this month from Mathematica and IES. The study explores how students of TFA and Teaching Fellow math teachers compare to students taking the same course in the same school from teachers who went through traditional certification programs or other programs not as rigorous as TFA or Teaching Fellows.
And let me just ask quickly, did you yourself go through a teaching fellows program?
I was a DC teaching fellow.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Keep that in mind when I give you the results.
Yes.
It's the first look at this question using random assignment, the gold standard for empirical research. Students in each participating school were randomly assigned to their teachers. The study included almost 9,000 students and 300 teachers, and here are the findings. First, students who had TFA teachers did better than students in the comparison classrooms. On average, they scored 0.07 standard deviations higher on end-of-year math assessments, which doesn't sound like much, but it's equivalent to an additional 2.6 months of school for the average student. It's also like moving a student from the 27th to 30th percentile in math. Second, students who had teaching fellows teachers didn't do any better or worse than students in comparison classrooms. Students of novice teaching fellows teachers did do better than novice comparison teachers. So the effects sort of mellowed out as teachers gained more experience. Also important, the findings are not necessarily reflective of the programs alone. They also reflect differences in the people who choose to enter them. Finally, a bit on the characteristics of these teachers. Both TFA and teaching fellows teachers have less experience than their peers. They're less likely to be minorities. They graduated from more selective colleges. They're less likely to have been math majors, but more likely to score higher on tests of math content. But what actually matters? Only years of experience, and for high school, math content knowledge were associated with higher student achievement.
Boom. Wow. All right. A lot to unpack here. And I hope, of course, was just teasing on the whole teaching fellows piece. But interesting. First of all, how do they try to understand why TFA might be more effective than the teaching fellows program? Are there any hypotheses out there?
So there are actually a lot. But what's interesting is these hypotheses for why TFA teachers might be more effective are very similar to reasons why teaching fellows teachers might be more effective, that they're highly selective programs, that their applicants tend to have attended higher quality colleges and universities, that they score better on math content exams. And so they're all of these reasons are actually attributable to both programs. Yeah, and so they didn't actually unpack it very much. On the surface, one of the primary differences between the two programs is that TFA, it has a national standard of quality control, whereas the Teaching Fellows programs are more locally managed. Mm-hmm. So it could create geographical variation. The other reason perhaps is that TFA has the reputation of being two and out, whereas and they're looking for high flyers, or people who apply tend to be high flyers looking for a resume item, versus teaching fellows, where it is more of a long-term commitment and it's also billed as a mid-career program. So you're not necessarily getting stars in their eyes college grads. You're probably getting someone who would be similar to someone going through a traditional certification program, but who just wants to fast track it.
But they're older, which is, you know, what I had always assumed, that perhaps one reason why new teachers were so ineffective in general is just that they're young. I mean, no offense to young people, but, you know, but when you're, you know, only 22 and you don't have any job experience yet, you're just not as good at anything as once you've a little bit older and you've got some more job experience. But that doesn't really pan out here, if to the extent that the, you know, that these teaching fellow people are maybe 5 or 10 years older than the TFA people.
Well, I think it's years of experience in teaching is what they really matter. I mean, the study didn't look at the age of the teachers in comparison. It only compared teaching experience levels between TFA teaching fellows and the comparison groups. And across all teachers, years of teaching experience led to students, or was associated with students with higher achievement.
Yeah. Now, some of the critics are saying, hey, look, let's be careful. First of all, these are very mild effects. And we're just looking at math here in these higher grades. grades. That this is not applicable to all the different kinds of subjects that Teach for America teachers might end up teaching.
Right. And I also think, you know, the study authors were very clear about this, that they didn't study causality. So it's not necessarily something that the program does to create highly effective teachers mm-hmm. that then increase student achievement, that it could have everything to do with the type of person that these right. programs recruit.
But that is the program. I mean, that's the argument, right?
Well,
I mean,
that's part of the argument.
I mean, look, I was involved with this study way back when I was at the Department of Ed when it was just starting, and that was part of the debate was, is the program the training and what people go through, or is part of the program the selectivity of the program? And so, you know, because you could do a study and you could hold for, you could try to find people who were similar, you know, going through these different routes that looked similar, or control for the selectivity of their colleges or their test scores. But the whole point of a Teach for America or a new teacher fellows is to try to get a different kind of person than who would go through a traditional route.
And, you know, to piggyback on that point, I think you're completely right in that, why did I go through a teaching fellows program and not a traditional teacher certification program? Because I was confident enough in my other skills mm-hmm. that I thought, you know what, I'll be okay with a 5-week prep program. And yep. is that something that that DC teaching fellows did for me? Not necessarily. They supported me during the program, but mm-hmm. I was the type of person who would apply to a program like that.
Mm-hmm. And yet, Brickman, you didn't apply to any of these programs.
I didn't.
Why not?
I don't know. I guess if you can't teach, then you help pass laws about teaching, right?
That's exactly
how it goes.
Right. That's exactly right.
Does it matter, though, on the if it's recruitment, if it's what's actually going on in the teacher prep programs? Does it really matter? I mean, I think ultimately, taking a short program and being thrown into the classroom, you should be able to do better than that if you're in a teacher prep program, don't you think?
Oh, perhaps the message here is that traditional teacher prep programs would be better served by increasing their selectivity.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And that's the question. The question is, can we do that? Can we get better qualified people to go into traditional teacher prep? Those programs, the quality needs to be better, and they probably need to find a way to be more prestigious too. And this is what people talk about with Finland and with, you know, that you want to make teaching a respected profession. Teach for America has found a way to make teaching in the inner city something that is prestigious and that is a resume booster and that is something you are happy to tell people about at a party. You know, we've got to find ways for that same effect. I said this last week, you know, can we find a way to create a network of high quality ed schools that have some kind of branded program that has that same kind of prestige, but, you know, with more training ahead of time and with an eye towards people staying for their, you know, a lot longer, at least a big chunk of their careers.
Or you could always pay teachers more.
And you could also pay teachers more. Yo, yeah, let's get into labor markets, Dara. Sure, that's another option too. All right, thanks, Dara. Well, it's great having you on this section. I look forward to you joining me as my guest co-host, even though you will not be doing Amber's Research Minute anymore, because she'll be back next week.
Yep.
All right, and we'll talk about Amber's research honeymoon on the show. Until then,
I'm Michael Brickman.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.